Welcome to Stories of Change and Creativity. I'm Judy Oscom, a university professor, Gallup Strengths Coach, and Tiny Habits Certified Coach. On this podcast, we feature interviews who inspire, motivate, and educate. Cassandra LeClaire has been on a lifelong journey to find herself, her whole self. Dr. LeClaire is a communication studies professor at Texas State University. Her story is powerful. For many years as a child, Cassandra was the victim of sexual abuse, and for decades, she never told a soul. She shares the heartbreaking story of her abuse in her book, Being Whole, Healing My Trauma, and Finding My Voice. LeClaire talks about the importance of addressing trauma and crisis. She calls the book a fractured memoir. It's really her survival story. Now she's on a mission to help others find their voice like she found her own. I think you'll find this interesting. For our listeners, I've been following Cassandra's career for a number of years, and she's got such an important story to tell. And let's sort of start there, because I bought your book. I bought the audiobook, and Cassandra just released Being Whole, Healing from Trauma and Reclaiming My Voice. Where do we start with that? Because you said this is a story you never really planned to tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you know, I didn't ever plan to tell this story, and I never planned to write this book. So, you know, I can tell you a story about how it all came to be, I guess, is the best place to start. You know, one of the reasons, you know, you mentioned that I'm a communication studies professor at Texas State. And one of the reasons I think I was so drawn to the communication studies field and the idea of identity and personality and speaking about your truths is because I never felt I was able to use my voice myself. So I learned and discovered how to help other people because it was something that I struggled with. So that was kind of like where my career began. But what the struggle really was for me is something that I didn't think about or didn't address. And so my book actually is a result of a car accident. So I was going about my life and I thought I was doing pretty great. I'd had all sorts of different struggles and things like that, but I felt like I was in a solid place. And then my family was hit by a drunk driver. And even though the accident itself wasn't, you know, you see traumatic accidents, this wasn't that. We walked away with minor physical injuries. What it did to me inside is something that, I mean, only now, several years removed from it, I'm beginning to really understand and think about what that felt like overall. So it took me back to this kind of place of unresolved trauma. And it forced me into this kind of flight or flight position where I was either going to be forced to deal with some past trauma, or I was going to spiral into a very bad place. So what that accident was it was the catalyst for some really deep healing I had to do. And so what I did is I went back to my childhood and I really went back and addressed these memories. I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, and I never told anyone. I didn't talk about it. And in fact, I got so skilled at hiding it and pretending I was fine that I convinced myself I was fine. And that any hardship or difficulty I had throughout my entire life, there is no way I would have even connected it to those events because I was so secure that that didn't matter and that wasn't part of me anymore. So what happened with all of this, with the book, how I wrote a book, is I went through some pretty deep trauma healing. I kind of shut my life down while I tried to figure out what was going on with me because I didn't feel safe enough to talk about it. I didn't tell my friends. I didn't tell my family. I turned off my social media. I still came to work, talked to my students, talked to my kids. And then I just tried to heal and tried to figure out what was going on and how I could work through some of the things that I was experiencing. And so
talk about because the car wreck was not the story.
No,
that
not
was,
at all.
Like you said, the catalyst.
Catalyst.
But
yes.
I think it's fascinating. How does that happen? Why do you think you got so skilled at hiding childhood sexual abuse and listening to your story? And I'm so glad that you recorded the audiobook. You have a great voice and presence as a communication scholar, but it was so touching to hear that. and to hear the story from your, you actually did find your voice.
I did, you know, and how that happened is, yeah, the accident wasn't the, you know, it wasn't the worst thing that's ever happened to me, but it was my breaking point. And that's the thing that I think is so important to think about, you know, when we're looking at other people's lives and kind of judging, you know, oh, I don't know why that upset them so much. Or why was that the thing? You don't know where somebody else's breaking point is. You don't understand all the cumulative effects or the things that have led them to that point. Right. And so it might be sometimes it is small things that trigger us or set us back to a different space. And so for me, what happened is I started, you know, as I was going through trauma therapy and, you know, as a researcher and as a professor, I have access to so much too. And I know how to research. So I was in the library constantly, you know, reading everything I could, understanding more about trauma. I got certified in trauma, different trauma classes, because then it was, you know, became a quest, right? And so what happened is I got, you know, kind of done, even though you're never done healing, but I got to a place where I was like feeling like I had moved through some things. And I went back and read my journals. And as I was reading my journals, I was like, oh, okay. I see some things here. Because again, I'm a trained researcher. I'm trained to look for patterns and data, right? And so I saw the patterns. I coded my journals. I used myself as a research project, essentially. And I coded my journals. And the names of the chapters are just the themes that I came up with from reading my own journals. And I sat back and I looked at it and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, here's a theme of people pleasing. Here's a theme of me wanting achievements and then achievements feeling empty. And why? Because I'm chasing achievements to feel good about myself because I don't feel good about myself. Here's a theme of me, you know, not standing up for myself because of a fear of authority. Here's a theme, you know, whatever it was, right? And I got done, Judy, and I saw those themes and I wrote it out and I didn't have a choice anymore of whether or not it was going to be a book because I read those things and I knew very clearly that I am not the only person who experiences this.
Exactly.
I am not. Exactly. And I had, and then it was like almost a sick push, like, okay, now this is a book. I guess I'm writing a book. I'm publishing a book. I don't know how to do that, but I'm going to do it. Now I want to give a TEDx talk about it. So I'm going to do that. And everything has just been because I have felt compelled to really talk about these things and not from an abuse perspective, but from a perspective of we're all working to heal from different things. And if we can step back and kind of see our patterns and recognize our triggers and really then work to communicate from a place of honoring that and understanding that, then we can open up such beautiful spaces with other people. And so that's really my whole mission and goal is like, I want that. I want other people to feel what I get to feel now. Because right. I didn't feel it. And I thought it was possible for other people, but I did not think it was possible for myself.
Well, and what a good process for everyone listening who is doing journaling to understand how to codify that and theme it, and then to go back and retool and learn. And you're a natural learner and educator. That's part of your DNA and part of your strengths as well. But I think that's important to look at from what I loved about the book is I loved how you put at the end of every chapter, messages for moving forward. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I loved because I always like a takeaway and I always like to read a story and think, okay. And I love how you added that as an element for readers and listeners as well. So why did you think that was important? Kind of goes with your whole theme about sharing the information, right?
Yeah. And so many of those things, it's really special to me because a lot of those things are just little pieces of lectures, the things that I'll tell my students or messages that I needed to hear for myself, you know? So when I was writing my book and I was looking at my notes and looking at different things, it's like, this is what I needed to hear today. Or as I was writing my book, I was teaching. And so my students, actually, they knew about it. They were my biggest cheerleaders. And so some of the things, and I teach, of course, about relationships and feelings and emotional expression. And so it's natural the you know, these things collide and they kind of are always part of what I'm discovering. So I had these pieces at the end of the book and I knew or at the end of each chapter, and I knew I wanted them to go there, but I didn't have any idea. I was like, I don't know how they fit. So it was actually a friend of mine who said, I think that these you should call them messages for moving forward. And I was like, yes, yep, that's what that is. Because that's what so much of this is to me, is like, how do we get through it? How do we move through things, you know, with honoring our feelings and our experiences, but then really working to move through them instead of being stuck. And we need those messages of hope and healing to move through things, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, without the car wreck and that tragic event, I think you have been so brave to go out and talk about all of this. I think a lot of us are so worried. We're so vulnerable and feeling we don't want to put ourselves out there. How did you get to that point where you finally, you know, the title of this podcast is Stories of Change and Creativity, and you kind of merge both of those areas, but how did you embrace change in that way in order to own your story and tell that story?
You know, it was something that I wasn't really prepared for. In my classes, I've always been really open and honest about a lot of things. Never this, you know, never, I had never talked about this, but about different things, where I always use a lot of examples and, you know, talk through different things in that way. And I'm always really interested in personal growth and development. So that's kind of always, as you said, been part of my personality. But I honestly, I just thought I had so much anxiety. I thought I had so much depression. I thought I had so many other things. And I remember being in office talking with somebody and saying, I'm tired of healing things halfway. I want to be whole. And that's kind of where the theme of my book came from, is that I just felt like I was constantly stuck, or I felt like I was supposed to be happy, or I would be frustrated, or I wouldn't understand then why I would do something and I would feel empty. And so for me, it was really like, I think if it hadn't been the accident, who knows what the next thing would have been.
Right.
If I look at the course of my life, honestly, I think there were several times where I was supposed to wake up a little bit and I didn't, you know, there were several other little stressors or several crises or several things that kind of were probably poking at me or different things. And so, yeah, I had to be in that accident to get me to wake up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that is what can happen for a lot of people, is that there can be just a situation that prompts you or pushes you into healing. And I didn't feel like I had a choice. You know, it was so hard and I didn't even, but I really just felt like I have to fix this, or I don't know how to go forward.
Because you were having physical challenges, mm-hmm, as well, right? Physical, right. Emotional, mental.
Absolutely. And now in that's the thing, the key thing for me about my healing and really addressing, you know, I really understand now the ways that if we don't address some of these things with trauma and crisis, they do manifest themselves in different ways and they just keep coming up. And that's where, on the cover of my book, it's Kintsugi pottery. And that's pottery that after it's broken, it's put back together with gold, because the idea is that you can be stronger than you were before, you know? So really, really embodying that and embracing that and using that change and that healing as a source of power and strength, and knowing that, like, okay, this is hard. It's hard every single day. And I think about my abuse every day, and it hurts in different ways every day still, even though I'm here and I can talk about it calmly, you know, there still are things. But I know that by facing that now and by really being able to step back, by learning how to calm my nervous system, I can understand then, you know, how it has impacted me. And it makes the change so much less scary, because I can feel more in control of it too, if that makes sense.
Well, and now I'm so glad that you're teaching and offering courses in this area, because for people listening going through trauma, what can they do? Sometimes you don't know where to go. You don't know what to do. And you don't really want to tell your family or your friends. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, seeking out courses and educational opportunities. Obviously now, you know, you have a podcast as well, correct?
Correct.
Talk about that a little bit, because I think that's a great, great avenue.
The podcast is also called Being Whole. And it's, I like to joke that it's a marketer's worst nightmare, because they're like, you know, Cassandra, who's your target audience? I'm like, everyone. And everyone needs to heal. And so if you even look at the guest list so far and continuing and going forward, It's a random collection of a bunch of different stories of people, how they manage. Some people have talked about how they manage their professional lives. Some people have talked about personal hardships, because my whole goal for this is I just want to create this space where people can go to and listen to whatever episode and maybe see pieces of themselves in that. Or, oh, I hadn't thought about this as a trick I could use, or I hadn't considered that this is something that might be impacting me. Because I think that that's one of the reasons why we don't talk about trauma or stress or, you know, hardship, is because so often we think we're alone. We think we're the only person who feels that way. We're a little bit ashamed because we feel like we should not feel those things, right? And then also we're worried about that judgment. We, you know, unfortunately, people have been in situations where they've disclosed personal or private information to somebody and it hasn't gone well. You know, either somebody has, you know, given them a poor reaction or taken that information and used it against them or whatever it is, right? So there's a reason we feel guarded and it feels scary. So even just recognizing and slowly getting to those spaces, like, again, like you said, okay, who are my safe people and where do those people exist? And sometimes it isn't anyone that you know right now. Okay. I didn't have anyone that I felt comfortable with because I was scared about what I was feeling inside. I was like, oh, this is so much. I don't know. And so I really did, even finding people on Instagram to follow. Again, you know, we trash social media so often, but if you're curating it in a way that is showing you things that are positive and showing you things about personal growth and development, I follow a ton of people who talk about trauma healing. I feel really seen and heard and valued when I see the ways that they write about things, because I'm reminded that I'm not alone. So I guess, like, you know, people out there, I actually just talked to my students today in class about this, is like, find your expanders, you know, be it in your professional life, your personal life, your love life, whatever it is. Who are the people that make you feel like it's possible for you? You know, and that might not be somebody, you know, it might be a celebrity that you'll never meet, you know, it might be some random person, but who makes you feel like you can do this too? That's the person you need to find, right? And again, you don't even have to be in person with that person. If they evoke that feeling in you, you can get that through a screen or through text or whatever.
I think there's such hope with that message. And I think that's when, you know, when people read your book or listen to your book, because again, I'm a real audiobook fan. I love that. And I listen to your book while I'm riding my bicycle.
Oh, so I love
riding
that.
Out there. A couple times I stopped and thought, damn, that's a heavy story there, because yeah, it really did impact me when I heard you say those words and what you had gone through. And then to come out, I don't know that we ever get to the other side, but I don't know that there is another side. I think it's life. And I think life is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And I think going through that, and I'm so glad that you were able to share that message and you're providing some resources for beyond the university. Yes, mm-hmm. Texas State University, we all try and help our students and faculty, mm-hmm. but everybody needs this. Everybody needs this. Yep.
And that's really why, I mean, that's really why I decided to do this. And that's where my students did come in. They were like, you got to talk to our families. You've got to tell other people right. about these things. And you know, this is really what it is for me, is really getting this message out there, because we've tried the other ways. You know, we've tried beating around the bush and pushing things aside. And where has that gotten us? You know, and one of my things too, you know, people love to say things like, well, kids are resilient or they'll get through things. We have a whole, you know, host of adults who have not clearly gotten through things, right? So let's stop saying that too. And let's look at ways that we can help people move through things instead of just expecting that that's how we build resiliency, is by going through them. One other thing, you said something about, you know, people's reactions. So I did want to say something that is something I don't think people, when they're disclosing, it's something that can be difficult. A lot of times, especially after you've maybe gotten to a place, like I've gotten to a place where I can talk about my story very easily. People can ask me questions. It doesn't physically trigger me anymore. This is very much like work I want to do. But sometimes when I'm telling people I love or care about, or people I know, like you just said, you know, you read parts of my book and it was heavy or it was hard. So what I really had to do is learn to separate out people's initial reactions to hearing what I had to say from what their actual response was going to be. So what I mean by that is, you know, just last week I was having a conversation with my boyfriend and he asked me a couple questions about different things. And, you know, I said it very calmly and clearly, and you could see his face and he's just like, oh my God, you know, he's like, oh, and just, you know, going through all these emotions. And I could have sat and thought, oh, why is he responding this way or what have you? But it's again, knowing that he's hearing that information for the first time. You know, it's the same way when I tell my parents or what have you, when people are hearing information that's difficult for the first time, it is hard for them to manage that reaction, especially if they care about you. And so their nonverbals or even the things they say might not be exactly what you need in that moment, right? And so this is where I also encourage people when you're disclosing to give people a little bit of grace and let them process it a second and see how then they're going to come back and respond to you after they've had a chance to make sense of it. And that's something that I think is really important, because so often in conversations, we go with somebody's immediate reaction and then we get upset because it's not what we needed or wanted. But again, when you're dropping kind of bombshells on people, you got to give them a minute. You really do. And so if it doesn't go well for you the first time, I just, again, don't let that be the reason to never do it again.
Right. Right. And I always think too, and I always tell my girls, both my daughters are adopted from China. And so there's a lot of layers there. And I've always told them, it's your story to tell. If someone asks you a question, it's your story to tell. Mm-hmm. And how much or none or as little as you want. So mm-hmm. being able to own that story, yes, and know that they have the right not to tell the to tell whatever story they want. And just in your case, the fact that you put it in a book, obviously, you know, you were ready. But even I like that strategy of waiting and watching. And I think that's back to your communication research. That's just that's just great advice for us, you know.
Well, I think so much of it too is, you know, unfortunately, again, it is rare that I work with somebody or I meet somebody who doesn't want to talk about their story or doesn't want to share things. It's that they don't want to share things and have the responses that they've previously gotten. That's a big difference. Okay. Yeah. So that's where that learning to respond to people, learning to have empathy and the compassion component, and then also being able to say, as the person who's responding, you know, like, recognizing when you don't have the emotional capacity for somebody or being able to honor somebody else's experience without like feeding off of their emotions. You know, there's a bunch of different things. And that's why I say this is work, and it's a negotiation and a work in progress. And if you're in a relationship with individuals who are going through some of these things too, you know, learning other people's triggers and learning other people's patterns, I mean, that's a lot. So just even that's where that awareness comes in, you know, because I still have times, but now I feel it in my body. I can tell when it's happening more so, and I can separate it out and I can know, okay, this is not really about this moment. This is about something else. But again, that takes a lot of work and awareness. And so I want to encourage people, if you're not there or if you slip up, guess what? I do too. Okay. Cause it's the daily work of it. Cause you're essentially, you're retraining your brain and you're retraining your body. And that's for years of patterns, probably for most of us.
Let's touch on that just a little bit, because mm-hmm. I think understanding how the brain body mm-hmm. works together. Can you touch on that and how someone listening will know to watch for signs and to be concerned about regulation?
Well, and one of the easiest, I think, ways for me to describe emotional regulation is really just thinking about, where do emotions live in your body? And emotions live in your body. You can think about time of day, you can think about people, you can think about different times of your life and different scenarios. So one example I have, just even when my son was little, he was really upset about something and I could tell he was going to cry. And I was like, Kellen, it's okay if you want to cry. He's like, I don't want to cry. My nose is just all tingly. And you know that feeling like when you're about to cry, your nose kind of gets all tingly. And then it was like, that struck me. And of course, as a communication person, it's like, okay, yeah, that it starts that early, right? That we already separate our emotions from what we're feeling in our body, because we're trying to push something aside that makes us feel uncomfortable. You know, so you can think about maybe different topics. Like a lot of people, for example, they shy away from conflict. They don't like conflict. So when they start having a heated conversation, they might not even realize that their heart rate's rising, or they'll feel like a tightness in their throat even, or your pitch changes. So really even just starting to pay attention to some of those behaviors. Even something, sometimes it comes up in different ways. Like one of the things for me that I have is a trigger is finances. I was, you know, really worried about money. My abuser talked about how my family wouldn't have any money because my dad worked for him, all sorts of things. Right. So I was very much in this like kind of scarcity model of money my whole life. Am I going to have enough? Worried about it. So how that manifests sometimes in relationships is if somebody buys me something or does something like grandiose for me or nice, it actually makes me uncomfortable. Like I'm happy and it makes me feel so good. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that was so nice. But I also inside feel weird. I really do. I feel awkward and my heart goes races a little bit because I'm like, oh my gosh, did that person have that money to spend? I could never spend this much money on somebody. I wouldn't spend this much money on myself or whatever it is. Right. So even recognizing kind of where you take things, and there's a lot of research on that, you know, of getting yourself out of the storyline. Okay. We tell ourselves these stories and they've been conditioned in our brain to kind of make up scenarios, especially if we don't know how something's happening or why something's happening, your brain's going to give you a story. So it's really having that awareness to recognize, okay, what story is my brain in right now? Where am I feeling it in my body? Have I felt this somewhere before? Is it about this moment? You know, just kind of like really asking yourself some questions. I joke that sometimes I'm like a 2-year-old. I'm like, why? Kind of like poking at myself. Yeah. But I think, and not in a way of like, what's wrong with me or anything like that, but really, again, I've really reframed it for myself and it's powerful to me. It's powerful to me to be able to understand these things that I didn't used to understand. And now I know how to, you know, the heart rate rising, you know, the tightness in the chest, those things still happen, but they don't make me feel bad about myself anymore. Right. I would feel so bad when it happened, or I wouldn't understand, or I would react. And then I'd beat myself up and I'd be like, why did I do that? So now it gives me the tools to kind of stop a little bit and recognize what's happening before I lash out or before whatever else. Yeah.
Well, it is a lot about learning the tools and the strategies in order to then analyze. I mean, we are our own best advocate and our own best enemy in some cases, yeah. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think too, you know, there's so much research that's continuing to come out, like neuroscience research, different brain developments and things that we're noticing. And that's also just, you know, we're never as stuck as we think we are. And that's the story our brain is telling us too. Like, I can't get out of this or I can't do it. And the reality of it is we really can work to create those new neural pathways, even in our brain. You know, one of my doctors even described it to me as like, you know, if you think of a road and, you know, your road right now has a bunch of deep ruts in it. And so when we work and do this work and you raise your awareness through meditation, all sorts of other things, you're basically kind of repaving over those ruts. You're kind of repaving your road in your brain. And I liked that, you know, sometimes the different visual examples are helpful.
Sure.
And so sometimes I think about that, I'm like, oh yeah, we hit a bump again, you know,
yeah, hit a bump again,
a little pothole right there,
or fix that bowl, use the goal to mend the bowl.
Right.
I love that.
And I think that that's the idea of it is it's not reality to think you're not going to have a hardship or times of dysfunction or crisis or what have you. Right. So rather than that being the goal, happiness shouldn't be the goal. Okay. I mean, obviously we all want to be happy, but it's working to move through whatever emotion you're experiencing. And understanding how that even in the hard times, it's how we move through them that then enables us to move through something else differently. Okay. So that's how we build resiliency, is how we learn to move through things, not just by going through it and sucking it up and then having another thing happen.
Well, so. And like you said, at the end of every chapter, messages for moving forward. I think that's great. Cassandra, thanks so much for sharing your time and expertise. And your book, Being Whole, Healing from Trauma and Reclaiming My Voice, and the podcast, Being Whole. Check her out. Thanks, Cassandra.
Thank you so much. It was so much fun. Glad to be here.
Thank you for listening to Stories of Change and Creativity. Check out the show notes for more information about this episode and to follow Cassandra LeClaire. If you have a story to tell or know someone who does, reach out to me at judyoskam.com. Thanks for listening.